All right, Shavuot, say good morning. Let us begin. Beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Lamed Tes 39. We are picking up Lamed Ches on base 38b, and we are picking up four lines up from the bottom. We begin by thanking our sponsors for this morning's shir, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Shvat, Ed and Faith Wolf, for dedicating all of the Shir Midrashos this month in memory of Faith's mother, Nessa Basavelvel, Zichrona Livracha, Bracha Strimber, for dedicating all of the Shir Midrashos this month in memory of her husband, Avram Ben Kamen Eliezer. We have an anonymous dedication for a week of learning this week in the merit of a Rafua Shalema for Kamen Leib Ben Genendel MS and Nechama Tamar Bas Bracha Sara. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, these cholim together with Kol Chol Yisrael have a complete and enduring refuah. And we also thank our week of learning sponsor, Jack Bennett, for dedicating the learning in memory of his grandfather, Chaim Fedorovsky, his first wife, Paulina, and their three children, and Jack's great-grandmother, Basia Fedorovsky, who were killed by the Nazis in Machshon Avzichron in Babi Yar in 1941. We also thank Manfred and Elaine Meisels for dedicating the shir this morning in commemoration of the Arzite of Elaine's father, Yitzchak, Ben Rav Chaim Ber HaKohen. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamas will have an aliyah, the families in Nechama, the cholim, and the refuah shalema together with Kol Chole Yisrael. And I will say with that, let us begin. An incredible Gemara ahead of us today. Massive. So let's remember again, we left off in the middle of the sugya of shlakos. Right, shlakos are cooked vegetables. So again, we already said this is a major machlokes tanoim in terms of what happens or what's the status of cooked vegetables. Do they retain their ha'adama designation, or do they acquire a shahakal designation? So I already saw a number of different possibilities. Continuing in that conversation, Master Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel, so Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel raised the kasha, Yirakol sha'adam yotzei ban yedecha vaso b'pesach. So we'll say vegetables through which one could discharge their obligation on Pesach. So what are we talking about when you say vegetables through which we can discharge our obligation? Maror. Which vegetables can be used for maror on Pesach? Let me say it differently. Any vegetable which can be used for maror on Pesach, yotzei b'hanu b'klach shalahen. You could go ahead and use the vegetable itself or its stalk. So whether it's the stalk of the vegetable, the leafy part of the vegetable, ultimately, again, that can be used for maror purposes. Aval, lo kvushin, v'lo shalukin, v'lo mevushalin. But you can't use it if it's been pickled, right? If it's been cooked, or if it's been mavushal, right? Shlukin and mavushin just refer to different forms of cooking. So what do you see from here? But if you hold that a cooked vegetable retains its identity and designation, so even if you took the vegetable and you cooked it, it should be usable for maror. Amai lo. Why can't I use a cooked vegetable for maror? To which the Gemara says, it's different. This is not a good raya. Why is this not a good raya? Shiny hasam, deba'inon tam maror velaka. This case is different, Rabbi. So why? Because what are we talking about over here? We're not just talking about stam, identity of vegetables. We're talking about maror. In order to be used for maror, what do you need? In order to be maror, it's got to taste like maror. The problem is, once you cook something, Rabbi, so what everyone's agreeing with is what? Once you cook something, obviously the taste changes. That's obvious and clear. So halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says, it could very well be that generally cooked vegetables do retain their identity. But over here, you cannot use a cooked vegetable by maror because it loses its taste. So the Gemara goes right there. Rabbi Yochanan, heichem mevarich al zayis maliach. So remember again, we mentioned in yesterday's daf that Rabbi Yochanan would go ahead and make a bracha. Now, the Gemara is referring over here, dafka, to a bracha achrona. How could it be that he went ahead and made a bracha on a salted olive? Kevan deshakli ligarine, top of lametes, butzer le shiura. We'll say, since the assumption over here is that this was a pitted olive, right? The pit was removed from the olive, so isn't it missing the requisite shear, the requisite amount in order for a bracha achrona? Look at Rashi, tap Rashi, lametes, and olive, butzer le shiura. The gabe birchas pirsos, just so you understand, we're just taking a little bit of a break from shlakos, just a little bit of a break from cooked vegetables for a moment. Commercial over here. So the Gemara says, so how can he make a bracha achrona on the pitted olive? After all, again, if it's missing the pit, is it not missing the shear, the amount, the volume for a bracha achrona? And Rashi says over here, the gabe birchas, tap Rashi, the gabe birchas peros haaretz, achila ksiva, vafila bekizayis. The assumption ultimately is that what? That in order to make a bracha achrona, specifically again, an ala eats, like you would be making ultimately again for four olives, you would require a shear of a kizayis, literally an olive's volume. Now, without the pit, doesn't it lack the volume? Armalei, me savris kizayis gadol ba'inon, kizayis beinoni ba'inon. Do you think that for bracha achrona, we need the size of a large olive? We don't need a large olive. We only need a medium-sized olive. And therefore, again, halacha lemaaseh, even the pitted olive fits that criteria. V'ha'ika. V'ahu da'aisu l'kameit Rabbi Yochanan zayis gadol hava. And it happens to be the olive that they brought before Rabbi Yochanan was a large olive. Da'af agav d'shakluha l'garinusei pash le'shiura. And even though it was pitted, right? Nevertheless, halacha lemaaseh, it still retained the correct shear. Disnan. Because we learned. Zayis sha'amru, the olive that we spoke about, Megabe Bracha Achrona, lo katan velo gadol, doesn't have to be very small, it's not very small, but it also doesn't have to be exceptionally large. Ela benoni, rather I will say, this actually happens to be very important, because halacha lemaisa, the Gemara here, although we're going to see this later on in a bit more specificity, but the idea, I will say, this is about the shear of a zayis. Right, what we call a kizayis. So kizayis literally means the size of an olive. Now we already know that the Talmudic olives were definitely significantly larger than our olives. Right? That we already know. So again, we'll see this a bit more inside, but here the Gemara says, when we speak about the shear of a kizayis, that kizayis ultimately, again, is not very small, nor is it very large. Ella beinoni. Rather, ultimately, it's a medium-sized olive. And this also happens to be known as vizeh aguri. This is what's called an aguri. Om Rabbi Avo, lo aguri shmo. By the way, the name of the olive is not actually an aguri olive. Ela abruti shmo. Its name is actually the abruti designation, right? Not the aguri designation. It's not an aguri olive. Everyone knows. There's no such thing as an aguri olive. Come on. Right? But it's what everyone knows as the abruti olive. Good. So the Gemara says, va'amri lei samarusi. Others say it's the Samrusi olive, okay? But Lama Nikrashma, Aguri Sabose, so if it's really Samrusi or it's really Abruti, and of course everyone knows that it's not Aguri, so why call it Aguri? Sheshmano Agur Besocho. Ultimately, why? Because Aguri Abose is not the actual name, but rather Aguri is a descriptive name. What does Aguri mean? Agur means collected. It means collected. So ultimately, again, that the olive, the oil is collected inside the olive. So we'll say, so very interesting. So Adam says, what does this matter? And we'll say, so here's what we know. We know that Gemara is spending a good amount of time. And remember, Talmudic real estate, is the most expensive type of real estate, right? It's like mamish, like waterfront property, right? With private frontage over here. So every line is significant. So why is it that the Gemara is spending so much time telling me about the name of an olive that's not really the name of the olive, right? So again, the name of the olive is either Samrusi or it's Abruti, but it's for sure not Aguri. Yet the Gemara refers to the olive as Aguri to tell me that what? That ultimately, halacha lemaisa, it's called aguri because of the oil that is collected inside it. We'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that sometimes the most important aspect of something is not what it is on the outside, but ultimately what it possesses and what it harnesses, what it gathers on the inside. And if that's true, ultimately, again, for the olive, Alachas kama v'kama, how true it is for us. The olive is called the aguri because on the outside it looks so ordinary, but yet you know that all of this is, it's this repository, this collection of beautiful oil. True for the olive, and I will say true for us. A lot of times we look at ourselves and we judge ourselves and we judge others based on what we see on the outside. But the truth is, each of us possesses so much kedusha, so much good, and so much holiness that is stored up, that is gathered up on the inside. So the olive might have many different names, but the most important identity is aguri, is the fact that it collects the oil on the outside. We might have many different names, many different identities also, but the most important aspect of who we are is the kedusha that is gathering inside of us, that is just yearning to come out. Nema ketanoi. So we'll say, let's say ultimately again, that this is a machlokes tanon. Dehanot, trei talmidi davi yosei kamei debar kafra. Because let's listen to this. So we'll say, so this idea, when we say, now, we're jumping back now. We're back now to shlokos. Right, back now to cooked vegetables, right? And ultimately trying to figure out what's the identity of the cooked vegetable. Is it halacha lemaisa? Is it considered to be like the raw vegetable? Or I should say, is it adama or is it shahakol? Right, that's the fundamental question. So name a ketanai, but it's a very interesting story. Very interesting on a variety of levels. So you'll see, name a ketanai, dahano che tamidi, dahaviyasi kamei dvar kafra. There were two talmidim who came before Bar Kafra. All right, now watch, follow this story. So they brought before them, changes it over here to Lifnehem. They brought before them. So Bar Kafra and these two unnamed Talmidim, you'll see why they are named unnamed in the story. The three of them are sitting together and they are going ahead and having a meal. And they brought before them the following food. Heviu Lefanov, Kruv, Durmaskin, and Pargiot. So we'll say it's actually very interesting. So Kruv we know is cabbage. Durmaskin is actually an interesting machlokis over here. So Rashi says over here, is Durmaskin is Afhein Shlokos, Me'esev Shekorin, quotes over something in Laz, Kachris, Vefesh, Babakama, Shabinu, Shabinu, Rabbin, Yitzchak, Rabbi Huda, Avakam, Perish, Runash, Shechin, Shamati, Anikam, Babakama, Bef, Shishab, Osei. So Rashi gives two different impossibilities. One of them is that it's some type of greens, right? Something Me'esev, some type of herb. Tosis says over here, he says that it's something. He says, see, he holds that it's also some type of cabbage or some type of leek. See, he holds that, so Rashi holds, Kruv and Dermaskin are two different types of items, although both of them may be Ha'adama. That's Rashi. Tosis holds that Halacha L'maisa, it's a different type of cabbage. We'll say the truth is, it actually doesn't really matter all that much. What matters for our purposes right now is that, let's assume for the moment that both Kruv and Dermaskin will both ultimately be the bracha of Hadama. Pargiot, I suppose it's interesting. Pargiot, I think we can temporarily choose the, what do they call it? Baby chicken. So it's interesting that the definition that's often used for pargiot is partridge meat, which is very interesting. But let's go with baby chicken. So ultimately, so what happens? The point is, it's meat. It's meat. So watch this. Or fowl, I should say. So the Gemara says, watch this. So what happened? So Nasabar Kafra Rosh Hashlachem Levarech. So Rav Kafra said to one of the two people there, one of the Talmidim, why don't you make the bracha on our behalf? Make the bracha on our behalf, right? You say the bracha out loud. Bimoti us in the bracha. And I also just want to point out something very interesting. And again, we'll see this sugya later on, but this is very dramatic. Why? Because what is Bar Kafra doing? Bar Kafra is telling one of them to be motzi the other two, Bar Kafra and the other Talmud, in the bracha rishona. Now, the truth is, this is very unique because normally we know the concept of bimoti, discharging someone else's obligation with bracha achrona. But rarely do we ever see a concept ultimately of bimotzi someone with bracha rishona. Now, the truth is, where do you see that? Right, but remember, that's you see it by Birchos HaMitzvah, like Hamotzi, like Kiddush, but in general, if I'm drinking a cup of, let's say we happen to be in the same place, and we both happen to be drinking a cup of coffee, and I say, okay, man, everybody, my bracha tashon, okay, right, and of course you close your eyes, you're even crying a little bit, and very moved by the bracha, right, you're still not Yotzi with my bracha. Right, that's how, so Tosas points out something very interesting over here. Take a look, quick look at Tosas. Nosan bar kafra roshus le'achamayon levarech v'nira demayi bebracha shalafonov v'bishal acharav harmina de mizana ala peros omayi behesebo. So we'll say, we're going to see this later on. We're going to see a lot of things later on. The idea is over here is when you eat together as a unit with hesebo, with reclining, that act of reclining makes you into one comprehensive meal unit of people, to the point that you're able literally to make brachos for one another. Va'anu ein lanu shum haseba ela alapas. So again, Tosfos already points out that generally we're not koveya. We don't really establish a meal together except around bread. So I said, by hamotzi, you can be motzi other people, although we'll discuss the scope of that, but by other brachos, you cannot. But the point over here is that Tosfos is making is don't glean halacha l'maaseh from this story. Because they are all reclining together, therefore they become a meal unit. And because they become a meal unit, even in the context of bracha rishona, in the first bracha, prior to eating, one could be motzi the other two. So Bar Kafra goes as bekavod, right? He gives one of the talmidim, right? One of the talmidim, the ability to make the bracha on behalf of the rest of the group. So watch this. Kafatz uberach ala pargiot. So what happened? The guy who was making the bracha, he mamish went right for the chicken, right? He went right for the pargiot. Shakol ni'abizvar, that was the first thing he made the bracha on. Now watch this. Ligleg alav chavero. So his friend, or the other unnamed Talmud, made fun of that guy. So the right, so we'll call it Talmud number one, made the bracha on the pargiot first, right? And then Talmud number two made fun of Talmud number one for making the bracha on the pargiot first. Now we'll say, now why is that? Why did he make fun of him? So Pashtun made fun of him because remember, in front of them, they have two brachas, right? What are the two brachas? Shahakol and Ha'adama, presumably. So also remember again, we haven't gotten to this yet, but in general, when it comes to brachos, in terms of creating a hierarchy, the more specific the bracha, the sooner you must make it. In other words, the more chashiv it is. So therefore, if you have a Ha'adama and a Shahakol, the Pashtus, what do you make the bracha on first? Right, Ha'adama. Now, of course, the novelty in this is, if you ask anyone, what's more chashiv? Chicken, right? Chicken or cabbage, right? Or cabbage, assuming your wife's not listening when you give this answer, right? So, of course, again, it's going to be the chicken, right? So that of course. So it's interesting. You see that really goes by the bracha. Again, we'll see these halachas. So the point over here is Talmud number two made fun of Talmud number one. So what happened? Kas Bar Kafra. So Bar Kafra got angry. Now watch this. Why does he get angry? Amar lo ala mevarech ani kois, ela amalagli gani kois. And I'm not angry at Talmud number one, who made the wrong bracha. I'm angry at Talmud number two, who made fun of Talmud number one. Why? Im chavercha dome kimishalo tam tam basar me'olam. Ata amalig lagda. So this is actually very interesting. So Bar Kafra understood the fact that Talmud number one went right for the pargiot, perhaps indicated that he didn't get so much access to more refined foods. Right, he was excited to see the pargiot. He was excited to see the fowl. So maybe it means that and again, he should have known the halacha. But maybe again, the reason he went for the pargiot is because he doesn't normally have access to that type of food. So he chastises student number two and says, "How can you make fun of your friend? Right? Maybe he never gets to taste chicken. He never gets to taste meat. Right? So he's jumping at it because he's excited for it, and you're making fun of him." Furthermore, he goes on Chazar Va'amar. Then Bar Kafra turns to us and says, "Va'amar lo amalagli gani kais." I'm not angry at Talmud number two because he made fun of Talmud number one. And the Gemara says, "Ela ala mevarech ani kois." But Bar Kafra says, "I'm angry at Talmud number one who made the bracha." Why? Va'amar im chachma in kan zikna in kan. So ultimately, again, so Bar Kafra says, even if you don't think I'm a bigger Talmud chacham than you, I'm still older than you. See, he was chastising student number one for, why don't you ask me which bracha you should make first? Instead of going ahead, so bottom line, Bar Kafra is angry at both of them. Right? He's angry at Talmud number two for mocking Talmud number one, and he's angry at Talmud number one because, listen, you have two different types of food here. Don't you think you should ask a shayla? I'm Bar Kafra. Even if I'm not smarter than you, I'm older than you, and out of deference, you could have asked me what the right course is over here. Look at Rashi. Zikna inkan. Halo zokinani. I'm older than you. Vahaya lo lahash ilini al izimehen yavarech liftras sharhaminin. You should have asked me which bracha to make. Now, Rashi says over here, which bracha to make in order to exempt the other food items, but even leaving aside exemptions, which bracha should I make ultimately again in the right order? Udvarm halalo in a bun alafe says, apasphipe. So we're not going to leave it on the side. So the Gemara goes right to us. So Utana, we'll say the Gemara has a very strong end. Neither of these two Talmidim lived out the year. So the idea being that first of all, you see this incredible, incredible, strong Gemara, that number one, what happens when a person offends a Talmid Chacham, that's number one, and what happens when we offend each other. I just want to say, there's two affronts over here. There's an affront to Torah. Bar Kafra's covet was impugned, and the fact that they impugned the covet of one another. So my love, I'll come with you. So now let's go back for just a second. Let's talk about the story. So obviously, I both say, between the two students, there was a machlokis, right? So Talmud number one, student number one, made the bracha on the pargiot first. Student number two says, come on, that's ridiculous. You should have made the bracha on the vegetables first. So what are they arguing about? So my love, I'll come if lagi, the mevarich savar shlokos upargios shakol niye bidvaro. It must be that what? It must be that the student who made the bracha, right, will come Talmud number one, assumed Rabbo said that what? Now remember, we're assuming over here that the vegetables that were being consumed, the dermaskin and the kruv, were both cooked. They're both cooked. So it could be that Talmud number one said, what's the halacha with cooked vegetables, Rabbo say? They're shakol. So really what you have over here in front of you is what? Two foods which are both shahakol, right? The pargiot are shahakol, the vegetables are shahakol because they're cooked. Rabbo say, now what do you do when you have two foods of the same bracha? Which one do you make the bracha over? So the Gemara says, Hilchach Chaviv Adif. So we'll say, again, we're going to see all of these halachas, that when you have two foods of the same bracha, you make the bracha on the one you like better. The one you like better is considered the more chashuv. So maybe student number one says like this, in front of me I have three different foods, but they're all shahakol. Because cooked vegetables, according to this opinion, are also shahakol. So the vegetables are shahakol, the pargiot are shahakol. I'll make the shahakol on the pargiot. Why? Because that's chaviv. Because again, I favor that more. Umelagleg savor, and the student number two, who is the student who made fun of student number one, savor shlokos ber pi adama. He held cooked vegetables still retain their status as regular vegetables, and therefore, again, their bracha is hadama. So really what I have over here in front of me is as follows. I have vegetables which are hadama. I have the pargiot, which are shahakol. Hilchach peira adif. You will say, what do you do when you have a conflict between, or not a conflict, but what do you do when you have both shahakol and hadama? Which bracha do you make first? Hadama. And therefore, again, student number two says to student number one, you really should have made the bracha over the vegetables first. So we'll say, so therefore, what the Gemara is just suggesting is from this story, ultimately is what? Is the machlokis regarding the status of cooked vegetables, to which the Gemara says, lo. It's not true. Everyone agrees, according to this approach, everyone agrees that cooked vegetables are shahakol. So we'll say, so therefore, again, you have a plate full of shahakol. The pargiot are shahakol. The cooked vegetables are shahakol. So what are they arguing about? It's incredible. Mar savar chaviv adif, umar savar kruv adif v'zayin. This is very interesting. So we'll say, so the first student assumed that because everything on the plate is shahakol, right? The cooked vegetables are shahakol, the pargiot are shahakol, therefore what? Which one do I make the bracha on? Chaviv. That which is nearest and dearest to me, and for student number one, that was the pargiot. Student number two said that apparently cabbage has a satiating-like quality associated with it. That the cabbage is zayin. Zayin means literally it sustains, it satisfies. So because cabbage has that quality, therefore what? It's more chashuv than the pargiot, and therefore you should make the shahakol on the cabbage before the pargiot. Okay, so we'll say, so bottom line, we're still not sure exactly what to do regarding the shlokos. Amar Vizera, ki avinon bei Rav Huna Amar lan, hani garlidi, the lifta. So now, says Rabbi Zeira, when we were in the house of Rav Huna, so we learned as follows. These garlidi de lifta, Rashi says, Rashi liftos, the heads of turnips, the top of turnips. So these turnip tops, so what's the halacha? Paraminhu prima rabba brei pri adama. If you cut it into large pieces, you say brei pri adama. Prima zuta shakol niyabidvaro. Cut it into small pieces, you only make a shahakol. So we'll say, according to what the Gemara seems to be saying over here is, if you cut it into large pieces, so it's still recognizable as a turnip, then halach lamaisi make a brepi adama. If you cut it small enough that it's no longer recognizable as a turnip, you make a shahakol. To which the Gemara says, v'chi asan labei Rabbi Yehuda amralan idi v'idi brepi adama. And Rabbi Yehuda said, no, not true. No matter how small you cut it up, right, a turnip top is a turnip top, and therefore it always gets a brepi adama. Whether it's big pieces or whether it's small pieces. Which also tells you that Allah Lamaisa, even if you take an item and you cut it up into small pieces, even if it's not immediately recognizable what it is, it still retains its bracha identity as long as it is being consumed in the normal form. And the reason, this just seems to be like a culinary identity or a culinary fact. The reason why people tend to cut up turnips in very small pieces is apparently when you cut it smaller, it tastes sweeter. Okay. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avina be Rav Kahana. Amar lan, when we were in the house of Rav Kahana, he told us as follows. Amar lan, tavshila de silka de lo mafshi be kimcha. Now, Rabbi, so just, we're gonna transition here to a little bit of a different topic. So just to go back to the cooked vegetables, we're just long. What's the halach with cooked vegetables? So we'll say, the halach is really as we saw it yesterday. That halach lemaisa, as long as a vegetable is being consumed in a normal form, then halacha lemaisa, it retains its bracha of ha'adama. So if a vegetable is eaten raw, or a vegetable is eaten cooked, as long as that's the normal form in which it is consumed, it will retain a ha'adama. If you go ahead and you eat a vegetable in an abnormal form, then ein achinami, it loses its ha'adama, and it retains, and it acquires a shahakol. So that's the guiding light. As long as there's normative consumption, It retains its hadama. Now, we'll say, now watch this case. Amar Rashi, ki avinu rav kahana, amar lan tafshila de silka. There was this dish, silka, we'll say, are beets. So there was this dish made with beets, de lo mafshi behu kimcha. So we'll say, so apparently there was this dish with beets that they included, that had flour in it. Kemach means flour. So, but it didn't have a lot of flour. So because it was a relatively small amount of flour, therefore, brei pri adama. You make a brei pri adama on it. Interesting, I will say. Very interesting. You'll see why in just a moment. Delifta, but there was another dish with turnips. The maf shubahil kimka, which had a lot of flour. And what? Borei minei mezonos. Ultimately, again, you make up borei minei mezonos on it. The hada amar. And afterwards, he said, no. Idi brei pri adama. So we'll say the truth is in both of these dishes, both the turnip dish as well as the beet dish, even though what? They have flour inside of it. Nevertheless, you only make a brei pri adama. Why? Because at the end of the day, the flour is not included in there for taste, but rather the flour is just simply a binder. Now, I will say this is actually incredible. Why? Because it seems to fly in the face of that which we've seen a number of times over the last couple of daven. The statement of Rav and Shmuel who say that what? That in general, whenever you have grain mixed into something, it often appears that the bracha is what? Mizonos. So here I will say you have, let's be clear what the case is. Here you have some type of beet dish or some type of turnip dish that has flour. It has flour. And the Gemara says, halacha l'maisa, you're only going to make a brei pri adama. Why? Because the flour is not used for taste. The flour is only used as a binder. Shabbos says, I just want to point out to you, this indeed is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So in Simon Reishches, Sif Beis. So the Shulchan Aruch discusses the idea that in general, anything that has grain in it gets a mezonos, with a notable exception. Avalin lo nosan hadagan betafshil, ela ledabko ulak foso. But at the end of the day, if the grain is not there, right, the grain-based item is not there to provide taste, but is only there as a binder, batal betafshil. Ultimately, again, it is batal in the food. It's batal in the food, and halacha lamaisa, the food gets its, we'll call it, you know, natural bracha and not a mezonos. So the Mishnah Berurah comments on this. He says, for the flour is not coming to add taste. The flour is not coming to add any type of satiety qualities. Literally, it's coming as a binder. Even if one put in a good amount of flour, the Mishnah Berurah says, as long as it is clearly acting in the capacity as a binder and not as flavor-enhancing, halacha l'maaseh, it doesn't require mezonos. There happens to be an interesting discussion in the Sharat Siyan. He says, no. Once you're adding in a lot of flour, it's impossible that the flour does not impact taste in some way. What's a lot of flour? What's a little bit of flour? Again, I will say, remember, I'm just going to, the Shulchan Aruch paskens in a very clear and unequivocal fashion. If flour is being introduced as a binder, whether it's a lot, whether it's a little, halacha lemaisa, that does not move the bracha needle, it won't get a mezonos, so it'll get whatever the natural bracha on the food. It's really a fascinating halacha. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amar Rav Chisda, tavshil shal tshadin yafel aleiv. Shabbos say, ultimately, again, the Gemara says, that a tafshil, a food made of tradin, tradin are also beets, are good for the heart, v'tov le'inayim, and good for the eyes, v'chol shekein libnei me'ayim, and they're good for the intestines also. Amra baye, v'hudi yasiv abe tafi, v'avit tuch. This is only true if you are cooking the beets, right? And they're sitting on top of the stove, and they make a tuch sound. So apparently tuch is the sound that your beets make when they are boiling. Good. Amra papa, pshitali, Maya de silka kisugya. We'll see another fascinating sugya. Vegetable soup. So we'll say, see now, Maya de silka ultimately means this is water in which beets were cooked. Right? So again, I've cooked beets, I've made beet soup. Water in which beets were soup, in which beets were cooked. Kisilka ultimately has the status of beets, which sounds like what? That halach lamaisa, if you eat beet soup, you make a borei pri ha'adama on that. Now, obviously, we're not talking about a case where what? We're eating the beets, right? Because if you're eating the beets, then what? Then of course you make an adal. What's the shayla? The CC that the Gemara is saying over here that halacha lamaisa, if you have vegetable soup, even if you're not eating the vegetables, but you are eating the liquid, you're eating the broth, halacha lamaisa, the broth takes on the identity of the vegetable, and you make a brei priyadama. Ubaya de lifta, kilifta. Similarly, again, you make turnip soup, right? But you're not eating the turnips, but you eat the soup. Ultimate has the status of the turnips, gets a rabbi adam. Maya de kulashalki, kulashalki. And in general, any water in which you cook a vegetable, that water takes on the identity of that vegetable and takes on its bracha as well. So, by that, Papa raised the shayla. Interesting. Maya de shiv samai. What about water in which you cooked dill? What if you cooked dill inside of water? Dill soup. So what is the status of dill soup? So we'll say, so what's the shayla? So the Gemara is actually very interesting. So my, limatuke taima avdi, o la'aburi zuama avdi. So we'll say, so apparently, there's a fundamental machlokes in terms of what the role of dill was. Is dill there as a flavor enhancer? Or is dill there to remove certain negative tastes or smell? So we'll say, so therefore again, why? So what does this matter? If dill is a flavor enhancer, then dill will be treated like every other vegetable, and halacha lemaisa, it's water, right? It's broth, will have the same identity as the vegetable. Versus if dill is only there to remove odor, then or scent, right, or negative taste, then halacha lemaisa, its broth should not have the same identity as it. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's analyze. Tashma, hasheves mishenitna tam b'kedera inba mishum truma. So we'll say once you introduce sheves is dill. Once you introduce dill into a pot, right, and it goes and it gives its flavor inba mishum truma. So we'll say it's actually quite interesting. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here sheves inba bebat shala mishenasnua b'kedera v'hotzia v'hotziuha. What if we'll say if you were to take a piece of dill that it's truma, and you were to introduce it into a pot, and it cooks in there. So presumably it goes ahead and emits its flavor. And then you take it out of the pot. Once the dill emits its flavor, essentially it no longer has the status of truma. So in other words, that it's used. Once it's used and its flavor depleted, it no longer has the status of truma. The harvilei ke'etz ba'alma. Rather, it's just like a piece of wood. So back to the Gemara. Ve'ena metamit tumas ochel. Therefore, it doesn't contract tumas ochel neither. But what do you see from here? I'll say, we're not worried about truma. What you see from here is that sheves is introduced for flavor. Shmamina lematuke taima avdi lei shmamina. You see from here that dill is used for flavor. So we'll say, because dill is used for flavor, therefore what? Therefore, halacha lemaisa, dill soup will be treated like any other vegetable soup. And if you eat the broth, if you drink the broth, halacha lemaisa, it gets a bracha of hadama, just like the original vegetable. I'm going to b'chibar ashi. Pas tsunuma. So we'll say there's more to say on vegetable soup, which we will see. I'm going to b'chibar ashi. Pas tsunuma. So we'll say, look at Rashi. Pas tsunuma. Yevesha shednitna bekara lishros b'chin tsunumos dakos. So pas tsunuma, we'll say, means pieces of dried out bread that are placed in a bowl in order to like reconstitute them, right? To rehydrate them so that they become edible. Tsunuma literally means like a rock, hardened bread. So pas tsunuma bakara that you put into a pot with broth, with some type of liquid. So mevarachin aleha hamotzi, you make hamotzi on pas tsunuma. Upligid rabchia, darabchia, tsarak shetich lebracha ima pas. I'm going to say, now remember again, pas tsunuma are pieces of bread. Right, so it's hardened pieces of bread that you put into a bowl of soup or a bowl of liquid in order to make it moist again that you can eat it. So Moses says, but remember, these are pieces of bread, not a whole loaf. So the Gemara says something very interesting. This argues on Reb Chiya, because Reb Chiya said, Tzarek shetich lebrachim apas, which Moses says literally means that the breaking of the loaf should coincide with the end of the bracha, which means that as you're making hamotzi lecha min ha'aretz, as you're saying ha'aretz, what should you be doing? You should be breaking the loaves. You should be making a bracha on a whole loaf, an intact piece of bread, an intact loaf. And as you're finishing the bracha, you should be breaking the loaf together with the end of the bracha. Maskif la rabba. Rabba says, 1 second. Maishna tsunuma dolo mishum nechikalya bracha aprusakakalya. So why don't you like pas tsunuma? Why don't you like this bread? Because by the time you finish the bracha, the bread is already broken, so to speak. You're making a bracha over a piece, over a partial. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So ala pas nami kika gamra prusa gamra. But according to what you just described, by the time you finish the bracha, even if you're starting with a whole loaf, What's the process you're describing? You're breaking the loaf when? With the conclusion of the bracha, which means that by the time the bracha is finished, you're also concluding the bracha on a broken loaf. The Gemara says, you're right. Ella amud beis, ella amud rava, mevarich va'achar kach botzea. You first make hamotzi, and then when you finish hamotzi, is when you break the bread. So we'll say it's actually quite amazing. There's a fundamental, there apparently was a machlokes about when you break bread. It's literally where this comes from. When do you break bread? Do you break the bread while concluding the bracha? And in other words, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, and as you say, haaretz, the bread is broken apart. Or do you say hamotzi lechem min haaretz? Stop, break bread then. So the Gemara says, Rava says, the preferred practice is finish the bracha, finish hamotzi lechem min haaretz, and when you finish the bracha, ultimately again, break the bread then. Rashi says, or tap Rashi on the testament base, el amar Rava mevarech v'akach potzea, v'gomer kala bracha, finish the bracha in its entirety. The goal is that you should complete the bracha on a full intact loaf. Only once you finish the bracha on a full intact loaf should you subsequently go ahead and break the loaf. Nardoi of the Krabichia. So the Nardom and Bava used to conduct themselves like Krabichia. In other words, so they would break the loaf as they were concluding the bracha, v'rabbanan avdi k'rava. And the rabbis went in and conducting themselves like Rava. Amravina. So Ravina said, Amrili aim, my mother told me, avucha avid k'rabchia. This is actually very moving. So Ravina, apparently his father must have passed away when he was young. So his mother told him, your father used to conduct himself like Rabbi Chia. Like Rabbi Chia. Dam Rabbi Chia, tzarek shetichle bracha im hapas. So Ravina said, my mother told me that my father used to conduct himself with Ravina, namely, that he would break the loaf as he was concluding the bracha. But the rabbis conducted themselves like Rava, i.e. recite the bracha on a whole loaf, and only break the loaf once the bracha is completed. The Hilchasa Kirava. And I will say the halacha, in fact, as codified in Shulchan Aruch as well, follows Rava de Amar, Mevarich va'achar kach botzea, who says that halacha l'maisa, what do? First you make the hamotzi, complete bracha, and then only once you finish the bracha do you break the loaf. So we'll say that indeed is the halacha. So we're going to see, this is part of a much bigger discussion, which is whenever possible to make a bracha on a shalem, to make a bracha on something that is complete, something that is whole. So therefore, again, because we're going to see that you make a bracha on something that is whole, therefore the proper bracha etiquette is halacha l'maisa, go ahead and finish the bracha on the item itself that is whole. Good. So the Gemara says, "Vayter itmar heviu lefnehem pesisin ushlemet." So we'll say now, continuing ultimately again on this topic, if they brought before an individual a piece of bread and a complete loaf. So we'll say, so pesisin literally means pieces, shlemet means whole. Amar Rafuna, mevarech ala pesisin upotras ashlemet. So Rafuna says you can make a bracha on the pieces, and you could exempt the shleimen. I was saying, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says, see, what does that mean? You make a bracha on the pesisin, and you could be motzi the shleimen. So what it means is like this. Look at Rashi. Pesisin shleimen amar avuna in rutz mavarech ala pesisin. Ve'ma pesisin gedolim in ashleimen tzarech levarech alein. So essentially, what Rafuna is saying is like this. Halacha l'maisa, you can make a bracha whatever you want. Right? You want to make a bracha on the pieces, you want to make a bracha on the whole one, it's fine. Now, Rashi adds in something very interesting over here. So Rashi says, however, if the pesisin, if the pieces are larger than the whole, then you should make the bracha on the pieces. So we'll say, so we're going to see it like this. So Rav Hunas is saying two things. Number one, that even if you have pieces and the whole, you can make the bracha on the pieces if you'd rather. But if the pieces are larger than the whole, then ultimately you should make the bracha on the pieces. Or in other words, we'll say, state it a little differently. If you have one item that is gadol, one item that is shalim, one that is large, one that is whole, you make the bracha on the gadol and not on the shalim. We'll see that. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, shleima mitzah min amavchar. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, halacha l'maisa, something that is whole is always nicer. It's just the idea of hidr over here. Make the bracha on the whole item and not on the piece. Aval prusa. So we'll say, so again, so this is the machlokes. We'll say, see here what's happening over here? A fundamental machlokes. What's more important? What's more important? Gadol or shalim? So we'll say, the Katzker says, this is not just a machlokes by bread, but it's a machlokes by life. What's more important, to be a gadol or to be a shalim? So the Katzker says, we're going to see halacha l'maisa, the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan, that it's better to be a shalim. What does this mean? So we'll say, anyone could be a gadol. Anyone could be a gadol for a moment. Right? We all have moments ultimately, again, when we shine and when we're great. But to be shalem means someone who's whole. To be whole means a certain level of consistency. To burn bright here, to burn bright there is very nice. It's beautiful. But even better than burning bright every once in a while is to be a shalem, is to be someone who is consistent. And even though I might not be the greatest tzaddik, I might not be the greatest gadol, but l'maisa, the ability to perpetuate and to keep up a certain level and a certain standard of spiritual conduct day in and day out, to be a shalem is always better than being a gadol. But we'll see how the halacha turns out. That was the God's case. The Gemara says, "Said Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Shemis Amin Avchar." But I will say, watch this. Avol prusa shel chitin ushlema shel seorin. But listen to this. If you have a piece of, let's say, wheat bread and a whole intact barley loaf. So we'll say in this case over here. So you have a piece of wheat bread and a whole barley loaf. Divrei Hakol Mavarech ala prusa shel chitin upotras ashlema shel seorin. Everyone agrees in that case that what? You make a bracha on the wheat bread and not on the barley. Why, Rabbi Osei? Why? Because wheat was always considered to be superior to barley. So you see something very interesting. So you see that even Rabbi Yochanan, who says that shalem is more important than prusa, than a piece, says that's only true if quality-wise they're the same. But if quality-wise they are dramatically dissimilar, then ultimately what? You make the bracha on the quality, even if it's not the shalem. Again, we're going to see the hashkaf on all of these items as well. Incredible life hashkaf. I'm Rabbi Yirmi Bar Abba, Kitanoi. The truth is, this is machlokes tanoim. Here we go. Tarmin batzel katan shalem. So let's listen to this. You could take as truma, a small whole onion. So we'll say, as I'm tithing my produce. So what happens? I could separate as truma a small whole onion. So we'll say, what's the chab over here? The onion is small, it's true, but what? So it's a katan, it's not a gadol, but what? It's shalim, it's whole. Avalo chatzi batzal gadol. But you should not separate as truma a large half an onion. So I say, see over here, that if you have a choice between a large half an onion, which again, volume-wise, and maybe even quality-wise, might be a better onion, Lamai said, we'd rather you take truma from the small, we'd rather you separate as truma the small whole onion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo, ki ela chatzi batzal gadol. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. In fact, again, if the larger half onion is better than the smaller whole onion, then separate out the larger half onion as truma. My love, b'hakim yefkirbos, what are they arguing about? So, demar savar chashuv adif, umar savar shalim adif. So, what are they arguing about? We'll say one opinion, i.e. Rabbi Yehuda, holds that chashuv, that which is more important, is adif, right? Is preferable. So, therefore, again, if the half large onion is more chashuv than the small whole onion, then separate out the large half onion as truma. Versus the other opinion who says that, no, halacha lamaisa, something that is shalim, something that is whole, something that is intact, is more chashuv than something that is gadol, that is even more important, and therefore separate out the small, complete onion. So we'll say, so you see this machlokas, you see this tension between what? Between gadol and between shalim. So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, shalim adiv. Heichad di'igah kohen kol yamal pig. This is an interesting poskei by Truma. Where there is a Kohen who's present, we'll say, so sometimes, remember, sometimes when you separate out Truma, there would be you would have access to a Kohen who you could give the Truma to immediately. Other times, you would have to separate out Truma and what? Set it aside until you found a Kohen. So the Gemara says, Heichadika Kohen, Kuli Amalo Plegid, the Chashev Adif. So where there is, when you have immediate access to a Kohen, everyone agrees that you separate out the Chashev. So we'll say, in this case, what would be the Chashev? The larger half onion. Keep ligis, where they have machlok, yes? The leka coin. I will say, where I have no access to a coin. Why? Just now listen to this. Komakum shiyesh coin, tore min hayofa. Wherever you have access to a coin, you always give him of the nicest portion, which makes sense. I will say, because since there's no concern about spoilage, because I have immediate access to a coin, I give him of the nicest. And apparently, nicest means even if what? Even if it's not whole. So I would give him the large half an onion because that's nice, because I have immediate access. B'chomakum she'ein kohen, but where I don't have access to a kohen, then what? Tori mina miskayin. I separate out whatever will last longest. In other words, so the idea is, I don't know when I'm going to have access to a kohen. I want to make sure that when I get on the truma, it hasn't spoiled. So you separate out whatever could last the longest. Rabbi Huda says, no. Ein torim elam in ayyofa. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Whether you have access to a kohen, you don't have access to a kohen. Ultimately, again, when tithing, when taking truma, you always take truma from the nicest. Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, v'yirei shamayim yotzei yidei shneihem. So we'll say yirei, so we'll say, now going, jumping back for just a moment. A yirei shamayim ultimately will what? Will be yotzei both of these opinions. How does this work? We'll say, we're going back now for just a moment. How does that work? So the Gemara says, umanu mar brei dravina, de mar brei dravina, maniach prusa, besoch shlema, ubotzeh. So we'll say, now, what do you see over here? You see over here that halach lamaisa, we have this tension. We have this tension between gadol and shalem. So here's the case. I have two pieces of bread. One is, let's suppose the easy way to illustrate this is, I have a roll. A roll is shalim. Roll is shalim. But let's say I also have a nice piece of bread. That's a, what do you call it? Piece, not a slice. It's something substantial, right? Right? A good a part, not a slice, but a good part of the loaf. So it's not shalim. Right? I'm sorry? A gizunt, right? That was what I was looking for. That was what I says, right? I have a big piece of bread. So now, I say, here's the tension. One opinion says make the bracha on the shalim. The other opinion says make the bracha on the prusa because it's large. So therefore, again, the Gemara says over Yehuda says, Racham Bar Yitzchak says that a Yerush Shamayim is easier of Osai to go ahead and make everyone happy. How do you make everyone happy? Take the roll, put the roll on top because the roll is whole. Put the prusa underneath. Right, the whole one. Rabbi, I want to point out, by the way, this is not Lechem Mishnah. It's not a point. It's selling. This is not Shabbos. It's a regular weekday. Right? So what do? Take the whole piece. Right? Take the roll. Put the prusa underneath it. And ultimately, again, make the bracha. Maniach prusa besoch shlima. Put the prusa besoch. Rabbi, it literally means, sounds like in, but we're going to say it literally means under. So put the prusa, take the piece, put it underneath the whole roll. And ultimately, again, make the bracha like that. Look at Rashi. Yotzi de shnei de machlokes sha'atun Rabbi Yochanan. So we'll say, so this is one of these ways where it's easy enough to make everyone happy. Take the prusa, take the piece, put it underneath the roll. And ultimately, again, go ahead and make the bracha. Now, Bosa, and interestingly enough, which one are you taking the bite out of? So look at Rashi. That's actually very interesting. He says, Maniach prusa tachas Hashema, benim tu shtem biyado, ubotzea, omishtehen, ominashlema. So we'll say, in that case, go ahead and what? Either take a piece off both of them. That maybe is the easiest. But if you want to take a piece off both of them, take a piece off the shlema. So I'll say, what you see over here is as follows. Really, the halacha is telling us that really the shalem is more important. Shalem is more important than gadol. But it's easy enough to make everyone happy. Take both of them in your hand. Shalem on top, prusa on the bottom. Take a piece from both of them or a piece on the prusa. Tani tani kamei drab nachar bar Yitzchak. Maniach prusa besoch ha-shlema ubotzea umevarech. Shabbos, listen to this. So a certain Tana taught this halacha before on Nachar Mayitzchak. He said, let's just make everyone happy. Take the shalim, put it on top of the prusa, make the bracha on both of them. And either go ahead and take a piece from both of them or a piece from the shalim. So Amar Leih, so let's listen to this. So Rav Nachman said to this particular Tana, Mashmecha, what's your name? Amar Leih, Salman. So, or Shalman. He said, my name is Shalman. Amar Leih, Shalomata Ushlima Mishnah Seich. So ultimately, again, you are a man of peace, and your teachings are whole, are complete. Shesam to shalom bein atamidim. Ultimately, again, because you've gone ahead and created peace between the Talmidim. In other words, what a beautiful suggestion. There's no need to go ahead and get involved in machlokas. Instead, what could we say? Everyone's right. The Shizbo said, not everybody's right. It's very important. Very important. There are people who are right, and there are people who are wrong. There are winners and there are losers. That's the way life works. Not everybody gets a trophy. But the idea over here is that what? That halacha lemaisa, really, shalem is what has greater chashivos. But the Gemara is just suggesting there's an easy way to kind of make everybody happy. Take the shalem, put the prusa underneath it, take a piece of hamotzi from both, or just some shalim, and that's it. That's just enough. But this time, Papa, Hakom Odin bePesach, Shemaniach Prusa B'Sof Shlima. Interestingly enough, we know that on Pesach, everyone agrees that you have to engage in this practice. That I will say again, remember, we know this is the halacha, that when going ahead and doing motzi matzah, right, we go ahead, making the bracha of hamotzi, well, for achilas matzah, we go ahead and we hold everything, including the prusa. You have to keep the piece of matzah together with the whole matzah. What's the reason for that? My taima lechem oni ksiv. I will say that's a little bit different. Why? Because halacha lemaisa by Pesach it says lechem oni, poor man's bread. And again, one of the drushes that the Gemara makes is ma oni darko beprusa. Just like the oni doesn't have a whole loaf, but he only has a piece of a loaf. Therefore, again, on Pesach, I will say it's just interesting. If you think about this, Pesach is actually one of the times when we do this. We have a whole matzah on top. The half matzah, right below, you happen to have another whole matzah below that also. But lemaisa, again, the middle matzah is broken, so you have the shalim and the prusa. So everyone agrees you do this on Pesach. Everyone agrees you do this on Pesach. But aloch lemaisa, if during the week, I happen to have a very nice shalim and a very nice prusa. So the halacha is, which one do you really make the bracha? If you're a purist, what is the halacha? You make the bracha on the shalim. But in order to go and make everyone happy, take the shalim on top, the prusa on the bottom, make kamosi on them both, take a piece from both of them, or at least a piece from the shalim, and shalom al Yisrael. So we'll stop here. We'll pick up the rest of this gemara tomorrow.